Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
The very first thing as a coach is you have to be motivated to be the best that you can be. And I know almost every coach listening is like, well, I want to be the best coach I can be. And it's like, really? Are you more concerned about being right? Or are you more concerned about, you know, getting the right outcome? And I think a lot of times we're more concerned about being right.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by author, speaker, and former head coach and athletic director, Jamie Beckler. Jamie and I have a great conversation. We talk about his new book, The Bus Trip, which has a ton of great leadership and culture lessons. But not only is it a great book, it's written about a basketball team by a former coach with dialogue that is super relatable, that I guarantee you've heard before in locker rooms, bus trips, situations that you've seen before. So it would really be a great read for any team, any athlete or coach. We also get into talk about his coaching experience. Jamie's Martin Methodist women's basketball teams regularly led the nation, or were one of the nation's leaders in rebounding statistics. And so we talk about rebounding, we talk about his coaching philosophy and his coaching experience. We hope you enjoy this conversation. If you do, please write us a review, tell your friends, subscribe to the podcast, and please follow along with what we are doing at risingcoaches.com. Before we get into today's episode, I want to take a minute to tell you about the Rising Coaches Association. Since 2010, Rising Coaches has put on unbelievable events, and people would always ask us, how do we get involved with Rising Coaches? What can we do to help the cause? And to be honest, we never really had a good answer until now. Sign up today for the Rising Coaches Association and become a part of our community and our network. You will receive exclusive content, and you will make genuine connections to others in the coaching profession that will help you both personally and professionally. Visit risingcoaches.com/membership and sign up today. Jamie, how are you? Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, doing great, Adam. Great to join you guys. Love the podcast. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much. You know, obviously we've had a chance to get a front row seat to your presentation. You spoke at our conference a few years ago in Indianapolis, and so super excited to have you on the podcast and get a chance to learn a little bit more from you today.
Thanks. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Obviously, we're going to get into your book a little bit later, but you started your career as a coach. You coached for many years and transitioned out of coaching into administration, and then out of administration into speaking and writing and consulting. Tell us about that transition out of coaching. How did you know it was time, and what made you feel like, you know, you wanted to go in another direction with your career?
Well, I have a bad answer to your question, in that I didn't really want to leave when I did, and I wasn't quite ready to leave coaching, but I knew I wanted to be an AD, and I thought that was in my future. And the opportunity came at a time when I didn't want it to come, but the opportunity seemed like it was too good to pass up. We had just had the best season in school history. We had had a great 4-year run at a place called Martin Methodist College in Tennessee, and we had really done well, been nationally ranked, set a lot of records, and we had everybody coming back. And all of a sudden, this opportunity came to be an athletic director. Came kind of out of the blue, and it was way too good to pass up, both from an opportunity standpoint and a financial standpoint. And so we took it, and but it wasn't something where I wanted to get out of coaching right then. And so I've always kind of had that little bug, you know, of I wasn't quite ready to leave coaching, but I knew that was going to happen eventually. And so we went to this position, and it was a high school position in Indiana at a place where they had the fifth largest gym in the country. Nobody has won more boys basketball state championships than this school. And so we took this opportunity because we thought, you know, hey, I'm a basketball guy. This is a basketball mecca and a great opportunity. And so we took it. And I stayed there for 2 years. And once I got into it, I realized, you know what? I thought I wanted to be an AD, but I don't want to be in an office all day. And I don't want to have to worry about if the blue Gatorade is out and all we have left is red Gatorade. You know, I didn't want to have to go to another ninth grade, you know, pick your sport, ninth grade volleyball match or swim meet or basketball game. And so I realized administration really wasn't for me. And during this time, I was I had always done public speaking as a coach. You know, a lot of the listeners, you know, you've been to Kiwanis or the Lions Club, or you go speak at, you know, different places. And so I'd been doing that, and leadership was a big deal to me. And so I had gotten John Maxwell certified to be a leadership coach. And so, it, you know, after 2 years, I was like, you know what, we can transition to something else. Let's see if we can do this full time. And I had some friends in the leadership space and the consulting space. And so I talked to them about it, and we just kind of jumped feet first in the deep end. And we quit, or we resigned as athletic director. We left organized sports and jumped into leadership consulting. And it's just grown from there, writing a couple books and starting a podcast and going all over the country, speaking at conferences like your Rising Coaches Conference, and speaking to different teams, doing retreats, doing pregame speeches, doing whatever it is that they need to help add value to their team.
What are some of the biggest lessons you've learned now that you've transitioned into the leadership space that, like, if you went back to coaching, you would apply from day one?
Man, I feel like I was such a bad coach. And I know I wasn't a bad coach, but I feel like I was such a bad coach after being in this space and really taking, you know, stepping away a little bit and looking at it objectively, looking at it, all right, what could I have done differently? And, you know, a couple things. One is I always cared about my players. That was never like a question for me. But the thing was, I'm not sure that all 15 of my players always knew for sure that I cared about them. Even though I did care about them, I'm not sure I always demonstrated that and showed that in the way that they needed me to show it and demonstrate it. And I think that that's a mistake that a lot of coaches make, is that they really don't connect with their players. Not like be their best friend and all buddy-buddy, but they don't connect with them to the point where those players know that that coach cares about them. And why that's so important is, you know, how many times do, as a coach, do we say, well, kids are different nowadays, or kids these days, or kids won't run through a wall for you anymore. Well, they will, if they know, like, and trust you, if they have a reason to, but if we don't connect with them, then they're not going to do those kind of things. And I wish I had taken that even to another level as a coach. I wish I had, you know, dived into, not necessarily dived into their life where I know everything about them, but dove in enough where they knew that I cared even more. And I think that that would have been huge, both for from a productivity, from an outputs, from a results standpoint, but also from their life standpoint. You know, but that's one of the biggest things. One of the other things is, I think as coaches, sometimes we think that, we're not as coachable, I guess I should say. I wasn't maybe as coachable. Some other coaches aren't as coachable as, you know, we'd like our players to be coachable, but we're not coachable. Sometimes we're not willing to adapt and adjust, even though we want our kids to be able to adapt and adjust to things and be able to be open to criticism and open to improvement. A lot of times we look at things always as, well, the kids did this, they didn't do this, it's their fault, or they weren't tough, or they did this, they didn't do that. Instead of, you know what, it's my job as the coach, it's my responsibility as the coach to make sure that they are doing that. And I have to find different ways. I have to adapt to situations. I have to adapt and adjust to them instead of them adapting and adjusting to me. And a lot of times I think that that's how we approach coaching, is that these 15 and 16 year olds have to be the mature ones. They're the ones that have to listen to us, and they are the ones that have to adapt to me. And it's like, okay, but I'm the adult. I'm the one that's going to be easy. It's easier for me to do that than them. And I think I was too stubborn as a coach, too oftentimes. And I think I expected my kids to be more mature than maybe they were. And I had to walk them through that. I had to help them grow. And maybe I didn't always do that as well as, as I could have done, I think.
I can totally relate that once you step away, you kind of gain some perspective and you realize maybe where some of your own shortcomings were or where other coaches fall short. But what are some strategies for a coach that doesn't step away from the career and is in the middle of it, in the thick of it? Maybe all they have is a couple month off season, which is constantly being interrupted by recruiting and workouts. You know, what are some ways to gain that perspective and to continue to grow when you're in the middle of it?
Yeah, the very first thing is you have to want to do that. And I know that sounds weird, but, you know, people will say, well, you're a motivational speaker or you motivate people. And it's like, I really don't, because if they're not willing to be motivated, nothing I say is going to work. You know, I could have the secret of life, you know, or whatever. And if they're not motivated to change. And so the very first thing as a coach is you have to be motivated to be the best that you can be. And I know almost every coach listening is like, well, I want to be the best coach I can be. And it's like, really? Are you more concerned about being right? Or are you more concerned about, you know, getting the right outcome? And I think a lot of times we're more concerned about being right. And I think about a story, and I wish I'd remembered this my first few years of coaching, but it was only after I got fired from my first job that this was brought to my attention. But I'm in high school. I'm walking down the sidewalk with my mom, and we have to get across the street. And, you know, like a punk kid, I'm not going to go up to the crosswalk. I'm just going to cross right there in the street. And I start to go, and my mom grabs my shoulder. She goes, you know, Jamie, there's a car coming. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's okay. I got this, Mom. Pedestrians have the right of way. And I'll never forget, you know, now I'll never forget. She said, yeah, and you'll be dead right. And a lot of times as coaches, we're dead right. A lot of times, you know, we're the smartest person in that locker room. We're the smartest person in that room. But if we're not open to the possibility that maybe just because we're the smartest person, that doesn't matter, because it's what we can get our kids to do. It's what we can get our kids to buy into. And make no mistake, we may not be a used car salesman, but we are a salesperson. We are trying to get our kids to buy into us for something, whether it's our philosophy, our ideas, or running a play or doing something that they don't want to do, which is almost everything, because kids really don't want to come to practice and run and work hard. And kids really don't want to sacrifice their own individual success for the success of the team. And so you have to sell them on all those kinds of things. Well, just being the smartest person and telling them they should do this and they should do that, that's not going to get your team from where they are now to where they need to be. And so you have to be open, very open to the possibility that the way you think is different than the way that they think. And a lot of coaches, and I was the same way, don't see that perspective. We see only our tree and not the whole forest. And the thing is, our players are also seeing only their tree and not the whole forest. And so we have to get this perspective of, you know what, there might be other ways to do things, but also the other thing is our kids are not going to see and believe they're not going to see the same things that we see. And so we have to be willing to open our minds to that. And so what that means is, all right, I'm going to have them do this play, or this play didn't work. Well, why didn't this play work? Well, because this person didn't screen here, or this person didn't do this. Yeah, well, it might be because they don't trust one another. It might be because they don't trust me. It might be that they have different agendas. They might like each other, but they have different agendas. And so someone didn't pass the ball to someone else. It might be that we put someone in a position that they're not best at. I remember one of my first years of coaching, I had this hotshot recruit that was an amazing scorer. Well, almost every play, she was a freshman, and her position, according to the playbook, was she was going to reverse the ball or pass the ball almost every time she got it, because that was part of the play. Well, that was really stupid of me in a way, because I'd keep getting mad at her. I kept getting mad at her because she would screw up the play. But the thing is, I didn't recruit her to be a reversal passer. I didn't recruit her to play this spot in a playbook where you just catch the ball and reverse the ball and go screen here. I recruited her as a scorer. And so I was putting her in a position that was essentially putting her in a position to fail. And then I would get mad at her. Well, that was my fault for not finding a way to add value to her and not find a way to utilize her skills. And I think coaches, we get so set on this is the way we're going to do it, or this is the way the play works, or this is this and this is that, that we don't think about really their perspective, and we don't think about where they're coming from, and we don't think about how to best utilize all of our players. I think I got a little off tangent there. I'm sorry.
No, that was great. I was gonna ask you, when you had it really rolling there your last year at Martin Methodist, did you feel like, you know, maybe you just had a lot of talent that year, or did you feel like those relationships really started to gel and you guys really got to the, you know, to the trust and connection level?
Yeah, you know, that was my fourth head coaching job, and every head coaching job I'd had up to that, I kept getting a little bit better. My first head coaching job, I was really young. I was 27 years old, one of the youngest NCAA head coaches, and I made all the mistakes in the book. My second and third job, we had pretty decent teams, and I learned more and more and got better and better. And that fourth head coaching job at Martin Methodist, it's not that I felt like I had arrived. I certainly hadn't done that, but I felt like that was the first time I was able that I really successfully put all of the lessons I had learned into practice. And so we didn't have superior talent. We had superior athleticism. We were very athletic, but basketball wise, we always had lots of players with flaws. And one of the things I did in recruiting, and this played into coaching too, was I found players that did something really well. I didn't find players that were really good. I found players that did something really well, and then I accentuated it. We tried to maximize people's strengths and minimize their weaknesses. So for instance, I did not give two hoots if a kid couldn't dribble with their left hand, couldn't make a layup with their left hand. We were going to make sure that everything that they did was going right. Right side. And I know that goes counter to what a lot of coaches teach, you know, or they want well-rounded players, or, you know, hey, in the off season, we're going to work on your weaknesses. We didn't really spend a lot of time on someone's weakness. I wanted to take their strengths and make them even better. I wanted to make them as good as possible with those strengths. And so we felt like we had a whole bunch of players on our team that all fit together, because one person's strength was another person's weakness. You know, let's say if we had two guards out there that one couldn't go right and one couldn't go left, well, we made sure that they weren't running into each other. You know, we made sure that we were utilizing the player going right when we needed to go right, those kind of things. You know, we put people in positions to be successful. We had a lot of what you would call quote unquote post players who really weren't very good post players, but we made them into double digit scorers and double digit rebounders because we put them in positions where they didn't have to make post moves. They just scored. Or one of the things we did, and I know I'm getting technical now, but one of the things we did, we pick and rolled people to death, but we rolled to rebound. We never rolled like our guards, we recruited amazing guards that could score. They couldn't pass or make very good decisions sometimes. But they were great scorers. They were great playmakers from a scoring standpoint. I wanted them off the pick and roll to look to score, and they weren't allowed to pass to the person rolling. Well, that fit the guard, but it also fit the post player because our post players weren't exceptionally skilled. But man, what they were good at is setting picks and then going and getting those rebounds. And so we rolled to rebound. And as we rolled, we would have rebounding position. And that's one of the reasons we also led the nation in rebounding a lot of times. So we tried to find people that were overlooked but could do something really well, and then accentuate those skills, maximize those strengths.
Yeah, I love that, rolling to rebound. I love that we're getting the hoops coach, Jamie, out of you today. And diving into some technical stuff.
Well, I told you, you know, I wasn't ready to leave coaching, and so I've always had that little bit of a bug. And so I've been fortunate. You know, most of the things I speak on or go to are leadership, culture, which is my specialty now. But man, there's been a few clinics, basketball clinics, I've gotten to go to and just speak about either rebounding or something else, and I love going to those things as well.
You mentioned that you got better with every head coaching opportunity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing that's been on my mind lately is as we launch our search firm and we're getting ready to launch a new podcast about hiring is head coaching experience. And a lot of times you see coaches get one shot to be a head coach. It doesn't work out the way they planned. Their coaching tenure ends and then they never get another shot at it. Do you think it's, I mean, wouldn't you think it's wise to keep, if it's a person who is about the right things and is a smart person, is willing to grow and learn, don't you think there's a lot of value in giving someone that second chance at, because there's no experience like being a head coach and like being, you know, a CEO or, you know, the main decision maker in your organization. And it takes time to figure it out, right?
Yeah, it really does. However, I would say that it's, and this is the worst answer you can always give, but it depends on the situation. That's such a cliche answer. But I would have been a terrible head coach the second time around if I hadn't learned a lot of stuff from the first time around. And not everybody learns. You know, we'd like to say that people learn. Not everybody learns, because when I got fired the first time, the first 2 days after getting fired, I was pretty bitter and I felt like a victim. And I thought that, you know, I got the raw end of the deal. I felt like I was doing things right. And the people that made the decision, they were dumb. They didn't understand. They didn't understand my situation. Well, I had a couple people speak life into me and essentially slap me around and tell me, wake up. You know, it doesn't matter. The reality is I didn't do as good of a job as I could. And it's my responsibility to be better. Now quit being bitter and be better, you know, but not everybody ends up having that in their life. And some people continue to be bitter, or some people continue not to go down the path of improvement. But generally speaking, Adam, yes, I would agree with you that if you've gotten that experience, it's really tough to replicate that experience as an assistant coach. You know, but that's where I say, I would also say that there's a lot of assistant coaches listening to this that aren't doing it the right way either, because they're not going about their daily job and they're not taking the mindset that they're a head coach in training. What they're taking the mindset of is, I'm an assistant coach, and that doesn't get them ready to be a head coach. You're never truly ready to be a head coach. Just like I was never truly ready to be a husband. You know, you can just be more prepared to be a husband and more prepared to be a head coach, but you're never truly ready. But what you don't want to be is not prepared enough. And so a lot of assistant coaches, you know, they go through their everyday coaching experience, you know, from a selfish standpoint. And what I mean by that is, well, coach made me do this. I don't like this, or I got to do this, or I got to do that, or I got to do this. They don't look at it from the head coach perspective. They don't put themselves in the shoes of the head coach, and they don't prepare themselves. And so they're not prepared as much when they get that opportunity, whether it be for an interview or the actual job. And getting the job, to me, interviewing for a head coaching job is extremely, it's just as important to be prepared for that as it is to be prepared to take over as a head coach. Because when you go in for that head coaching interview, that essentially could be day one of you being a head coach. You don't just get prepared when you get the job and then you have to become a head coach. You have to already be thinking like a head coach when you go into that interview, or you're not going to probably get the interview or get the job. And so that comes with, you know, you become a head coach years before you actually become a head coach. And I don't think enough assistant coaches think that way. Too many assistant coaches go home after a loss. And, you know, they might try to find blame, or they might say, you know, well, this is why we lost, but then that's the end of it. Then they kind of move on. Or, you know, they just take, well, this is what coaches tasked me with. I have these three roles. Well, try to get six more roles. Try to do everything. Try to do anything that you can to be more prepared. You know, drive your coach everywhere that you can. Talk with your head coach as much as possible. Volunteer to do more. Do everything. Be there. Hey, coach, can I be in the office when you're planning practice tomorrow? You know, whatever, you know what it means to actually set up a practice plan. Just think anything that you can to gain an edge, not only to be a better assistant coach now, but to be a better head coach candidate later on.
Yeah, that's great advice. and really good insight. And you're right, going back to what you said earlier, not everyone does learn. So that's step one, is being able to look yourself in the mirror and figure out, you know, am I dead right? You know, or to use your phrase. So
well, and that's just like players. There's some players, yeah, you know, that are just fourth year freshmen.
Right.
You know, they might be seniors, but they've never learned anything through those years. And just like as a coach, you might be a 20-year veteran, but you're essentially a 20-year rookie, you know, because you really don't learn every year. You're not coachable, whether you're in your job or if you lose your job. So it's always important, you know, change is going to happen. Years are going to go by, but are you actually growing and improving? That's the question.
Great insight. All right, Jamie. So let's talk a little bit about your book. And before we get into your new book, I just first want to say I'm a huge fan of the Leadership Playbook, which you've written three books now. Leadership Playbook was your first, and really great stuff. There's so many great stories and lessons to be learned and easily applied to your team. What was writing that first book like? You know, as somebody who, like you said, as a basketball coach transitioning into a new field, I mean, what's that first day like where you're staring at the blank computer screen?
You know, the way I wrote the first book is a little bit different than a lot of other authors, because I had, you know, 20 some years of coaching and administration where I had used a lot of these stories and philosophies. So I already had a lot of them written down or notes about these different sections or things that I wanted to say. And I had been doing, in consulting and speaking for about a year when I actually started writing this book. And so a lot of what I was saying and speaking on was what ended up in the book, but it just was, so I had a lot of the material. I just had to put it in book form. So it was a lot easier for me, I think, than other people, because I wasn't starting from scratch. I had been accumulating stuff for years and years and years. I just had to hone it into book form, but it was great. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of hard work though, because writing is, you know, as someone told me once, writing is easy, rewriting is the hard part. And so I was able to write this book, but then I had to go back and it was like, I got to make this actually good. You know, I just wrote stuff. Now I have to make it good. And so, but the whole time I'm writing that or my newest one, you know, the bus trip, each time I'm writing and my perspective as I write is, what would I want as a coach to give to my players? What would I want as a player, if I actually wanted to learn, if I wanted to be coachable, what would be something that would speak to me? So I was constantly trying to, what would help a team? What's going to add value the most? What's going to move them along, you know, from where they are to where they need to be? And so that's what I tried to do both in that first book and the last book I've written. So I tried to do it from that perspective. But, you know, I was always big into leadership. I always wanted my teams to be more than just X's and O's. You know, my teams rarely got technical fouls. My teams rarely had meltdowns like with referees or when things went bad, because we addressed those things ahead of time. It was a constant in practice. It was a constant afterwards. And when we had team meetings, we were constantly addressing that and trying to help prepare them for those things that could happen. The drama, the issues, the fires that would break out in the locker room, metaphorically speaking. You know, we tried to prepare them for what would come so that they're not, so that we minimize the chance for a meltdown in a game. And, you know, we see it sometimes in games where kids will get technical fouls at bad parts of the game, or we'll even see, you know, heaven forbid, we see fights in the game. You know, those kind of things will happen sometimes. They rarely happened with our teams, not because we had the best kids in the world, but because, you know, we addressed those things ahead of time and not waited. And so those are some of the things that I put in the books to try to, you know, what would I want to talk to our teams about? What would I want to get into their minds so that they're not just a good athlete, but they're a good player, so that they're a good person all the way around, not just getting by on their jumping ability or their 40-yard dash time.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, putting it in terms that players would want to hear and coaches would want to speak about. That's what I love about the bus trip is, you know, it's written from a team's perspective on a road trip. The dialogue, it's all stuff that you've heard before. The attitudes, the things the players are talking about on the bus in the book is all stuff that goes on every single road trip. And if you've coached, if you've played, you can really, really relate to it. And, you know, there's so many great leadership books out there. And for instance, we just did our book club, which we do with our members, on The Energy Bus by John Gordon. And that's obviously a great book. There's so many lessons in it. However, it's written more from a corporate perspective. And the main character is a businessman trying to lead a sales team. And so you're having to ask, even though the lessons are very clear and there's great stuff you can take from it, you're having to ask your athletes to put themselves in the position of a businessman. And not to compare your book or anything like that, but the thing that I love about The Bus Trip is it's written from the perspective of the athletes, of the coach, and it's in that familiar setting. So there's no leap you're having to ask people to make.
Yeah, I appreciate I appreciate the kind words. I appreciate you noticing that about the book. We, you know, it was very important to us that it wasn't written from a 45-year-old viewpoint. You know, this old coach who's out of touch. I didn't want it to be just lecturing, and I didn't want it to be out of touch conversation. Now, I'm also not going to speak exactly like a 15-year-old speaks, but we had, I was fortunate, we had about 10 current coaches, both in high school and college, on an advisory team. And then we had a couple current student athletes also on that advisory team. And they were able to give me feedback throughout the process because I wanted it to be, not only did I want it to teach good lessons and have a good point to it, but I wanted it to be relatable. I wanted a kid to be able to pick up this book, you know, and they're already mad because the coach just made them, you know, the coach is making them read this, or their mom put it in their stocking at Christmas, you know, and they don't want to read it. So I didn't want them to open it already not wanting to read it, but then they get into it and it's like, this is boring, or I can't relate to this at all. I wanted them from essentially the very start of the book to be like, oh, that's happened. Oh, I see that. Oh, that I've said that before. Or, oh, I heard this person say that. Or I want them to completely be able to relate to the book. And because I think once they are able to do that, then they're able to see, all right, well, I probably could say something different in this situation. Or, you know what, I had an opportunity once and I didn't say this, or I said the complete opposite of what was in the book. Maybe I probably should have said something more of what was in the book. And for those people that haven't read the book, essentially the premise is that this team is struggling. It's a challenging season, like so many of us have gone through, and the players are typical players that we run into. They're selfish, or they're only looking at themselves, their agenda. They're quick to pass blame, certainly on the coach. It's always the coach's fault or someone else's fault. And through a number of different situations and conversations during this trip, they come to hold each other accountable, and they come to understand what it's like to be a better teammate and a more positive leader. And I wanted that because I wanted to give a player a tool to understand what they could say in certain situations. And certainly the book is ideal. You know, certainly it's as a coach, it's the ideal situation. This is exactly what I would want a player to say. And I know players aren't accustomed to saying some of the things and holding each other accountable. But one thing you might have noticed, Adam, in the book is that every conversation that takes place and every time a student holds another student accountable, they're always friends. They're roommates or they're best friends. It's never somebody that doesn't have a good relationship with someone else. And I think that that's important when leadership is taking place, when you're trying to influence one person, when one person's trying to influence someone else, you have to have respect. You have to be friends with them essentially on a team, or else that person's really not going to listen to you.
Yeah. And I would also say that this book is valuable, not just for teams going through, you know, a struggle or a losing season like they do in the book, but even like really good teams, you see it every single year without fail. Great teams are always going to go through a dip in the season. And it may not be a 9-game losing streak. Maybe it's just back-to-back losses, which is uncommon for them. Maybe it's just one loss if the team's really good. But every team's going to go through the lull, and we talk about it all the time on the show. You know, it's a marathon. A college, you know, college basketball season is super long. A high school season is long. An NBA season is incredibly long. Like, it is really, really hard to stay emotionally balanced and stay connected and be about the right things for, you know, 8 months when you have to come and practice every single day, and, you know, it can become a grind. So, you know, I think there's lessons here.
That's
good for everybody.
That's a great point, Adam. Every coach listening to this is going to have some issues this year. Now, you might have more drama than someone else, or if you're winning, you might have a little less drama, but you're still going to have issues, and you're going to have those fires in the locker room. Or in the back of the bus, so to speak. And are you equipping them with lighter fluid or a fire extinguisher? You know, have you helped them prepare for when those fires happen? And that's one of the things in the book. You know, yes, it's a team amidst a challenging season, but this easily could have, a lot of these things could have happened if the team was undefeated. How are you still preparing your players for issues that are going to arise? And I would say almost every coach listening to this, when you've been winning, you've probably still had some issues with a parent, or you've had issues with players not playing the role that they want. Well, you know, they're happy that the team's winning, but they're unhappy with their role. Or maybe you make a change in the starting lineup, or maybe in this game, you know, you're doing a different strategy because it helps you for this game. Or maybe, you know, high school, it's hurting their scholarship chances if they're not getting as many touches, you know, or whatever. So even if you're winning, you're still going to have issues. And how are you preparing your players to handle those issues? And most of us, if you're like me as a coach, especially early on, I was preparing them for X's and O's. I wasn't preparing them for challenges and adversity and issues. I was preparing them for what we're going to do when we face this zone offense. Never mind, you know, I had the best offenses. You know, I had the best plays because I'm running Coach K stuff. I'm running Tom Izzo stuff, Pat Summitt stuff. But if those players aren't prepared mentally, if they don't know how to handle adversity, if they don't know how to handle challenges in the right way, if they don't know how to put their ego to the side, you know, it doesn't matter what plays you're running.
You know, it's not even, you know, you address some things in the book. Sometimes it's not even major drama. Sometimes it's just simply, you know, somebody showing up late to the bus or continually showing up right at the last second. And I would even say winning a lot of time masks those things and you don't address them. But, you know, we talk about it too. I'm doing some consulting work for a team, and, you know, they're really good and they've hit a little bit of a lull, and it hasn't shown up necessarily in the losses, but it's shown up in the energy, and you could just feel it around the team, and it's starting to be a grind a little bit. And we talk about it a lot. Can you hit the reset button with your team? Can you address some of these things? And everybody that's coached has, I'm sure, felt this. But if you can figure out, you know, 2/3 of the way through the year how to hit that reset button, and then all of a sudden, you know, the energy just changes and shots start falling and people are excited again, it's amazing. It's amazing what something like that can do when you do start, you know, expressing how much it means to you and going back to your purpose and your why, and, you know, then things like holding each other accountable starts to come into place.
I like that, the reset button. And, you know, you want to be in the business, if you can, of giving reminders and not teaching all the time. You know, recently there was a, you know, Kansas and Kansas State had a fight. Okay. In basketball. And every coach in America should have been talking to their team about that. Every single coach in America should have been addressing that situation with their teams and not saying, well, that would never happen to us, because you don't know. The more you can address things ahead of time, now you can remind people. You can give them quicker reminders, and they're able to snap out of things or able to be the remember the things quicker. You know, how many times do players get upset at referees? Well, if you've already had some issues or you've talked about some issues ahead of time, you can kind of snap them out of that trance where they're getting frustrated at something. You can kind of, you know, maybe there's a trigger word in a positive way, but there's a code word, or there's just something you say that calms someone down or gets them refocused. You know, Coach K talks about next play. Well, if you can talk about next play all the time or the next play mentally, you know, you can snap some people out of some, you know, downturns or where they get in a funk. You can remind them, you can hit that reset button, whatever it is, but you don't want to be teaching people in the heat of the moment. You want to be reminding them, because that will then bring them back to where they need to be quicker. If that makes sense. And I think as coaches, we need to be preparing our players for as many issues that could happen, and realistic issues, not like crazy, crazy situations. But we know we can go into every season and we know, you know, 10, 15 things that are going to happen during the season at some point. Well, we need to be addressing those, and we need to work on our kids' mentality so that they're prepared for those. So we're equipping them to handle those situations when they happen, and we can hit that reset button.
Yeah, it's amazing. If you just tell your kids what to expect, how much they gravitate to that and appreciate that. And you'd be surprised how much they do what you ask them to do if you just tell them what to expect and what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like you said, equip them for situations. I mean, essentially that's your job as a coach, is equip your athletes for situations that they're going to face. And that can't just be on the court, X's and O's.
The problem is that takes more time and it takes more effort on the coach's part. You know, I don't want to give up extra time in practice, or I don't want to, you know, we have to go over these plays, or we have to do this. And it's like, yeah, but the play itself is not what's causing you to lose or causing the problem. You know, take a little bit of extra time. Think about all the times you're going to bang your head against the wall, you know, or complain when you're sitting with other coaches in Waffle House late at night, you know, or you're sitting around, you know, a conference and you're complaining about your players. Think about everything you complain about with them and reverse engineer it, work backwards. How can I help them to be better at that, so we're not complaining about that? And almost always, it's not the play that screwed up. It's something up in their head, or it's something from a trust issue, something from a leadership or an intangible issue is why your play broke down. Most of the time, yes, our players might not be able to dribble with their left hand, or yes, they might not be able to shoot the ball really well. But most of the time, the fact of the matter is, it's not the play and the X's and O's that causes us the headaches. It's those intangibles. And so let's work to minimize those as much as possible.
Jamie, great stuff as always. The book is The Bus Trip. It's available on Amazon. You also are the host of Success is a Choice podcast, which is a great listen for anyone who obviously is into podcasts, if you're listening to this. Jamie, where else can people follow along with what you're doing?
Yeah, on Twitter, at Coach Beckler, and the last name is spelled Bechler. And I appreciate you mentioning the book. They can get it on Amazon. If they want to get it for their team, they can get it a lot cheaper at my website. So I don't make any more off of it, but they get it cheaper. So they can go to thebustripbook.com, thebustripbook.com. If they want to get it for their team, they can get it cheaper. Also there, we have free chapter discussion guides. So whether they get one copy or 50 copies, they can still get that for free at that same website, thebustripbook.com. And it's a one-page discussion guide for each chapter.
Yeah, and it really is a great resource for your team. Super easy read, and some really, really valuable lessons that 100% everybody will be able to relate to in your locker room. So thebustripbook.com, Success is a Choice podcast. Jamie, thanks so much for joining us today, and we hope to see you again soon.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.